You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the WFNY Cornercast, brought to you by the Evergreen Podcast Network and part of the Waiting for Next Year community. I am your host, Joe Gerbs Gerberry, and I am joined tonight by Dr. Mitch and new to the Cornercast, the wizard, Matt Milner. Sorry, that's my most like wrestling intro I got. That's it.
Well, I definitely appreciate it, Gerbs. Yeah. Glad to be on.
I don't remember.
Sports radio.
If, I know, like, right?
Yeah, good job. Like, you're a natural.
Oh, I try really. It's been my life's work just to, you know, host this podcast. Guys, it is opening day eve. You guys will hear, everyone will hear this on opening day. How are we feeling about the season? Are we excited? Are we not excited? Are we tempered with our hopes and fears?
It's, you know, we all have been Cleveland fans our entire lives. And I think being a Cleveland Guardians fan, at least the last, you know, decade or so, kind of always feels the same. maybe, you know, there have been ebbs and flows, but like, you know, it's always like, it's going to be fine. Like, they could win. They could not win. Like, who knows what's going to happen? Like, it's a luxury to feel like you're always in it every year. But at the same time, it's like hard to be more excited, you know, for the Guardians particularly than it is just like, hey, baseball starting. That's great. We get to have our old friends back for another half a year.
Yeah, it's kind of like its own version of purgatory where it's like you don't feel like you're going to suck. You're not sure if you're going to be great, but you know you're going to be competitive, and that's always the weird purgatory that is sports fandom. It's like it's uneasy, but it's like it's still fun at the same time because that mystery is still at least fun and interesting.
What was the Tito quote? Like, you're gonna win 60 games, you're gonna lose 60 games is what you do with the other 40, 42 or something like that.
Yeah, it's like, yeah I've heard various versions of that, and I think there's a lot of truth to it.
Yeah, and you know,
but especially when you're a Cleveland fan, especially when you're a fan of this team that's always solid,
right? You know? they're not awful. Crazy. They haven't bottomed out.
And if you like look at any prediction, every like write up, every power ranking, the Guardians are lower in it than they're going to end up being on the season, just because no one's excited to talk about them. No one's excited to write about them. I'm talking nationally. Obviously, we're very excited.
Right. 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 Oh yeah, we are hyped. We are ready. Yeah. No. Yeah, it's just so funny. And I know we bring it up in the Discord once in a while of like, KC we're gonna finish behind KC. What are they thinking? And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, it makes sense for them because they don't see the, like, I wrote about it today that there is hope in the team if you're willing to look at it. If you're willing to see it, it's there. You just have to actually like help yourself to it. But you could also be down on the team and no one would really be get on you about it. Because there wasn't off season upgrades to the offense. There wasn't, you know, the bullpen looks worse now than it did before. Kyle Manzardo and Chase DeLauder didn't make the opening day roster. They had to send back De Los Santos because, you know, he's 20 and hasn't played above AA. You know, all these things are like, yeah, this is bleak. But then you also think of, hey, Miles Straw isn't on this roster at this point, and Tyler Freeman's going to be a better center fielder bat than he is, and we get to watch a full season of Bo Naylor be catcher, and there's upgrades that are on the roster, but, you know, if you want to be upset about it, be upset about it.
Yeah, it's kind of the same story. it's kind of the same stories we have every year, right? Like, it's like, oh, there's, you know, pitching and there's young players and it could all work out and they could win 90 plus games or it could not work out. It's like, this is the same thing we've been saying the last 4 years. What are you going to say, Matt?
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, because it is opening day eve and we are only on our second episode, it leads us to a lot of questions. So, literally all my rundown is just says questions. I don't know why, but that's where I was. So first one to you, Mitch, what is your excitement level, to watch Jose Ramirez play baseball for your favorite, team?
Well, we're very blessed as a city to get to root for this guy who decided to spend his entire life or his entire prime in Cleveland. It's not something that we've experienced before, and it, I don't, you know, it's not getting old. It's really not.
For sure.
I'm pumped to watch Jose Ramirez, and like, you know, I think there's some concern maybe that he's starting his decline. This is his age 31 season, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, he went down a notch in war last year and his power numbers look a little lower. And there's been some question about his durability, the wrist, the thumb, you know, what's going to happen. But all it takes is one healthy year. All it takes is one healthy year where he's looks like Jose Ramirez of 2 years ago, of 3 years ago.
Right.
And yeah. We're right back there to, you know, this is one of the best five players in baseball. And so I'm pumped. I'm ready. I'm ready for Jose to finally hit that 40 homer mark. That's my,
yeah, I don't know.
Hot take.
That is a hot take. 40 home runs is a big number. One.
He's got a career high of 39. So I'm ready for him to hit that big 4-0. I'm turning 3-0 this year, guys. So I'm ready for Jose to hit the 4-0.
Wow.
I'm going to be 38 in October. I don't need to think about turning older.
Yeah, and I'm gonna be
39 actually.
Closer to 30.
I'm already 38. I'm gonna be 39 in October. I completely just lost how old I was. Thanks for that.
You're losing track.
I am. I'm already slipping.
Already losing your marbles a bit, Mitch.
Right.
Not Mitch, Garbs.
I don't remember who it was on the Celebius Godcast, in reference to Jose, you know, having reached his peak. But they said, even when you're at Mount Everest, it's still a long ways down. Like, I don't think he doesn't have the skill set that is going to fall precipitously. You know, he still has elite bat to ball capabilities. He has, you know, the power may go down a little bit, but it's not like he's going to all of a sudden just fall off that cliff. Even if he is on the downslope, it is a little bit of a harder climb back down. It's not like you're not just leaping off. So, Matt, what are your thoughts on Jose? I want to make sure I got him off the top because I know in past years I have felt bad myself that we don't end up talking about Jose enough, that we always make the like, who do you like outside of Jose to do this? Because it's just more interesting to bring up other players. But I wanted to make sure we touched on Jose early and often here. So what do you feel about Jose this year going into 2024?
Oh, my joy level, I would say, is definitely way above 10. Like, it's always a joy to watch Jose. I know we take for granted that he is a 4-5 WAR player every year. He turns like gappers into doubles because of his hustle. He's always had the ability to just like be a well-rounded hitter. Even if he is sort of on the decline, I don't think anybody should be worried about his longevity. Even if he is eventually relegated to a DH, which is possible in the next 3 to 5 years, he can still turn into a 3-WAR player. And he's just so fun. Like, some of the quotes that have been coming out the last couple weeks through Mandy Bell's story about, like, oh, what's your Uber driver alias? It's like, I'm a gangster. And then, like, Zach Meisel, like, asking him, how excited are you for opening day? And he's like, whatever, bro. He's just so fun. Like, he's just such a joy to have in this organization.
Home run pitch, bro. I mean, yeah, he's so charismatic, and he doesn't, like, I've often wondered how well he speaks English. Is it one of those where it's like he wants to be able to have that like second layer of thinking about his answers before he speaks, or, you know, because he's when he does speak English, it's always a blast. It's always so fun to hear what he says. I also wonder how much of his decline is injury related and how much of it's age related. And I think that's like one of my biggest questions this year.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. And I do agree. I think he's sandbagging the English. I think he's definitely well more bilingual than what he probably leads on.
Yeah, for sure. Because I remember there was one video, like this is back in the day when Trevor Bauer, before he was problematic, did these like live ABs in the desert. Jose speaks perfectly fine English. He was like, he did the whole Jose thing while they were doing it. So I definitely think he's sandbagging the public and he just knows the right thing to say just to get the quote in.
Which is fine. All right. So, Matt, I obviously we are excited about Jose. Going off of that, how happy are you that Miles Straw is not on this 40-man roster?
Oh, man. Unfortunately, it's very high that I'm very happy that Miles Straw is off the roster, but on a personal level, I did like him. He seemed like a very good guy, very good teammate, and like I was rooting for him to curb that regression that just seemed to hit him smack in the face after what looked like a good half of the year after he signed that extension. But I think the team made the right decision of just saying enough's enough, because when you go 2 years of looking like a guy that can't hit anything hard out of the infield, it's hard to justify that after a while. I would say I'm a 10 out of 10 on that one too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not happy about it. Like, I'm not going to root for guys to lose their job. Like, I want Miles Straw does seem like a good guy, and the Guardians did commit to him long term, so it's kind of a bummer that's not working out, even though, like, in the grand scheme of like Major League Baseball, the amount they commit is chump change. Like, they still did commit money toward a player, so you do want them to be rewarded for that as a fan. So it's disappointing to me. I think it's what's best for the team. Like, I think that's clear. Like, I think that he should not be getting 500 at-bats, 400 plate appearances, whatever you want to say. I think, you know, the defense is very valuable. But at a certain point, it's like, unless you're a backup catcher who's like making this huge impact off the field, which really isn't possible for anyone besides a catcher. Or like a leader, like a clubhouse leader, you know, a Giambi type or whatever, but like Austin Hedges type. That's not Miles Straw. So I'm bummed because I like the guy and I wanted it to work out for the team and for him. But it's the right call. I mean, even given that there isn't a great option for him on the roster in center field, like, you know, it's better than a guy who hits like a good hitting pitcher.
Yeah, it just what that scene where he was sitting with Chris Antonetti the other day, it just reminded me of just like, man, things just really fell apart fast to where it's like he's now sitting in the stands talking to our general manager about his future with the team, and he might not be on the roster after this year. It just reminded me just how fast things changed in such a very quick amount of time, because he did put up a 2-WAR season in 2022 just simply based off of glove, and then we were hoping that he would rebound a little bit, but he just never could. He could never get to where we wanted.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because even at that year, the 2-WAR year that was like there completely because of his defense, I think people were already sick of him because, you know, it's really easy to notice the bad hitting. And then when the defensive metrics kind of fell off a little last year, which I don't think was because he got worse at defense. I think just some fluky things happened that hurt his metrics. You know, when that happened, it was like, all right, people are banging on the tables and like lighting up torches in their pitchforks and stuff, you know? So
people are making strikeout bets on Miles Straw on, like, as fans. So, you know, that's when you know that there's a sign that things have fallen off here. So, things that haven't fallen off and actually got to a, let's see, is there, Mitch, do you think that Tanner Bibee has another level to reach this year? He finished second in the AL Rookie of the Year last year, led the pitching staff in WAR, had a 24% K rate. Like, every number looks great. Does Tanner Bibee have another level to get to?
I mean, I don't see why not. I have a hard time making, like, hard and fast predictions, as I think you know or remember, Gerbs. But I do think, like, he's got the stuff. He is clearly someone, like, as a person I believe in. He does seem like someone who is a constant striver to get better. And I think that is the kind of player that I would want to bet on if I were in the business of making, like, hard and fast predictions. Now, if I'm being realistic, I mean, he probably won't have as good of an ERA as he had last year. Probably. You know, the peripherals will probably get closer together. But the homers will probably go up. He only allowed an 8% homer per fly ball last year, and you'd expect it to be a little higher than that, maybe more in, like, the low teen range. So I do think that, you know, maybe from that standpoint, his numbers might look a little worse than last year at the end of this year. But I think we'll come out of the season being like, oh, this is a guy we can count on going forward. This is a guy who, you know, is a big part of this team going forward. He'll have a full season in the major leagues. We'll see how many innings he can get. In fact, I think that's the most important number, is how many innings does Tanner Bibee throw this year?
He had 142 in the bigs, and I think another, like, 20, almost 30 in the minors last year. I don't have his numbers pulled up, but I know he was at or around, like, 160 to 170 last year as a total. So if he ends up getting to, you know, close to 200 this year, that'd be pretty great. So 157. I found it. So 157. That's not, like I said, it's the low end of 160. Sure. It's a rounding error. That's what we do. You know, we like to make, sometimes I'm not always great with the numbers, guys. Baseball's a numbers thing, and it's fine. But it's, yeah, 157. If he can get to 200, that's or 190 ish. That's still a really good year for someone. I want to call him, like, what was that movie? Tinker Toy something, like Tinker Tanner.
Yeah, because
Tinker Taylor Box, Soldier Spy.
Yeah,
Tinker Soldier Spy.
Yeah, with Gary Oldman.
Yeah, Gary Oldman.
Yeah. That's you, Gerbs. Gary Oldman.
Gary. That is my name now, Gary Oldman. That's what
One other thing, sorry, about Bibee is that, you know, he threw his fastball more than any other pitch by a lot last year. His slider, his changeup are both very good. As he continues to get more comfortable, more command, like, he'll start to throw those pitches more, and that's ultimately the track for him becoming, like, an ace pitcher.
Yeah. Matt, do you have anything on Tanner Bibee, or do you have another pitcher that you are excited about on the roster coming up?
I have been buying all the stock on Gavin Williams taking a big step forward in his first full year. We saw glimpses of it when he came up that reminded me of Gerrit Cole. Obviously, this was very, like, in spurts. There were some games where he didn't get out of the fifth inning, but he still battled and gave the team a chance. And then there were some games like the Blue Jays game where he struck out, like, 12-plus batters. The whiffs were high. He just looked dominant throughout the game, and I feel like that experience that he had was so valuable, even if it was, like, a little more than a half of a season's worth of data. But I feel like that comfort is going to be so big because he's looked good in camp, even though he'll start off a little bit behind about a couple weeks. I feel so good about him and his progression that I feel like even if he takes a slight step forward, the stuff is so good that it can turn all the projection, like what we feel like is a potential elite bullpen to that elite starting rotation. I don't know why I said bullpen, but either way, I feel so good about Gavin Williams that I feel like he showed a little bit last year, but I think he can start scraping that ceiling this year with a full season's worth of stats.
Yeah, I almost got to you and said, you know, reminds you of Garrett Cole. It's like, oh, is it because they both hurt their elbows? And you are right. And Gavin is same thing with Bybee. I actually found the numbers this year. This time, he had 128 innings in professional ball in 2023. Actually, I take it back, another 14. So 140. That's what I thought it was. I thought it was, and it was lower anyway. 140-ish innings last year. So if they were they were likely going to still manage the back end of his season. Even though he's hurt now, he might miss only like a couple turns through the rotation. You're managing his workload on the front end of the season when you have a guy like Carrasco and guys like Tyler Beede who are on the roster that can manage that and help out a little bit more to where they are there so you don't have to worry about guys on the later half. And if you do, you can use those to cover up for Logan Allen or a Bybee or if Bieber is barking again. You can cover those guys. You can use them to cover them while Gavin's ready to go and roll into what could be playoff time. I think that's an interesting turn there that is different from how we might see it. We might see like, oh, he's hurt already. It's like, well, actually his workload's just already managed, so you can let him go later on in the year.
So, which for a playoff push, I mean, you can definitely like unleash that beast if I'm as confident as the organization is about him.
Yeah, I mean, this is what's so exciting about this. I mean, you can imagine any starting rotation going south just because that's the nature of pitching. You know, guys get injured. If lots of guys get injured, then the rotation's going to be bad. But, you know, injuries aside, this rotation is so exciting because, to be honest with you, I can see any of the young guys taking off. I mean, you can see anyone outside of Bieber, you know, we're talking McKenzie, we're talking, you know, the guys we've mentioned, also Allen, who I'm still a big fan of as well. You can see any of those guys take a step forward. You could see multiple of them take a step forward. And, you know, I think the Fangraphs came out with their positional power rankings, and they had the Guardians rotation 20th, which I was kind of surprised about. I think it has to do with the fact that they don't really have one guy who's projected to be a true blue ace, with Bieber kind of being not as sharp the last couple of years. But it really is a situation where you could see this being a top 10 rotation at the end of the year if everything goes right. And if everything goes right and they do have a top 10 rotation at the end of the year, you know, we're talking a top 5 rotation for 2025, because that's kind of the nature of this youth, you know, just guys take one step forward after the other. And that's really exciting. I mean, the track record alone is exciting. And then when you have these guys with this raw stuff and all of them are so young, I mean, we're gonna hopefully have a treat.
It's so easy to gush about these kids because they're just so talented. Even Logan Allen, who people seem to be down on, can be a very steady lefty for this rotation that they haven't had since what? I'm trying to think. Who's the guy in 2013? Scott Kazmir, yes.
Kazmir was the last lefty, and then Cliff Lee before him, I believe. So, yeah.
And CC, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's been a while.
It has been. So because this year so much was made about the offense and the lack of power added to the roster, I want to ask both of you, Matt, I'll ask you first, two questions in one. Who hits the first home run of the season, and who has the most by the end of the year for the guards?
Ooh, first home run of the year. I would, I have a feeling it might be Andres who gets the first home run. And then the guy that I feel pretty good about will get lead the team in home runs is probably Jose. But that's the standard answer. Cause
I mean, Mitch suggested he's going to hit 40 this year. So, I mean, it makes sense that you'd claim him as the best. So
for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Jose hitting 40, I'm obviously being a little tongue in cheek. Like, that's kind of my quote unquote bold prediction, to use a trope. Like, I think it's very possible, and I do think it's likely that he leads the team in home runs. As far as first home run, just because, like, this is such a random guess, you know, I think it's going to be the first step out of the year. I think it's going to be Stephen Kwan. Let's go.
Oh. Listen, I am Gary Oldman, and I will be asleep before
me too, buddy.
I'm not looking forward to being...
I'll probably be the only one awake on this podcast.
100%.
Because I'm a true sicko, so...
Luckily, Good Friday, I'm off. So I will be able to stay up a little bit later tomorrow. And I have plans on staying up for at least the first inning. But yeah, to see a Kwan home run right off the get, that'd be nice. I do think that because it is a lefty, there's a chance it's Ramon Laureano. But I'll give it to Josh Naylor as first. But as most, I actually think Brother Poe may end up being amongst the leaders there. I think he has sneaky power, and 25-ish may end up leading the team, which isn't a bad thing. If everybody's spread it out, that's where I'm at.
I don't know. I'd be disappointed if 25 led the team.
I would be disappointed too. Not going to lie. But I also know that, like, I think the emphasis on the team this year has been incremental gains on everyone as opposed to getting one big number. So I think Bo could be a guy that could end up with 25 plus, maybe 30 on a full season. And that'd be, you know, great coming from him. So, in this same vein, who steals the most bases?
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
There's not the Miles Straw to fall back on this year. And they've talked about, you know, wanting the hitters to be more aggressive at the plate. But I also saw today on an article on The Athletic, I think the guards were fifth in stolen bases over the spring. So, you know, if spring numbers mean anything, that's something that's interesting to look at. They've been in the top three or five the last two seasons. So it's even with a down year last year offensively, they still were running and near the end. I'm going to throw my hat in the ring first and say Andrés Giménez leads the league in stolen bases. I'll see him get 30.
Leads
the team, not
okay.
The league.
Okay, that makes
sense. No, there's still guys like Estre Ruiz that will, you know, pop off and do that. I think Andrés leads the team.
For what it's worth, leading in the AL, let's see, Giménez is one. He is only behind Ruiz, Witt, and Julio Rodriguez in terms of projected stolen base totals by the Fangraphs depth charts, which combine Zips and Steamer projection systems. So if he leads the league, it wouldn't be like that crazy, except for the fact that he's projected for 19 fewer than Estuary Rees. So probably not going to happen.
Probably not.
Yeah. I mean, just for the sake of being fun, I'm going to go with Jose Ramirez again. You know, that'll be a fun resurgence. Jose Ramirez with a nice little 40-25 number.
Or he could go 40 for 40. Who knows? Like
40-40? You think Jose is going 40-40 club? That's a God. We're trying to one-up each other in how homery we can be.
Right. He's hitting in the two hole. It could definitely happen. Yeah. I mean, it absolutely could. There's a guy in Nick Chubb, like, fan worship. Jose is there. And if there's a man that could come back and do all those things, you know, Jose getting a 40-40 year in his age 31 season, I wouldn't put anything past him at this point.
Yeah, I couldn't put that past him either, but I don't think that's probably as realistic. But so I'm going to probably stick to Andres because that was my guess, Gerbs, but because he did do 30, so I think he can definitely replicate that again.
All right. Well, we don't have Farmer Ethan on the podcast, but we do still talk about prospects even when he's not here. Much was made about Kyle Manzardo and Chase DeLauder over the offseason, especially through spring training. I think Chase had like a what was his average in spring training? Was it over 500? Because I think it was.
It was in the 500s. His OPS was like 1.500 something. He has, I made this joke up in the Discord, and it's been an inside joke with me. He won the Yu Chang Award for the best performance in spring training because Yu Chang would have this habit of putting up spring training numbers that would make you think he would be something, but then it wouldn't be mean anything. Not to say that Chase will be bad, but he definitely won the award simply because a lot of fans took notice of him. The organization probably thought, well, we'll let him be in big league camp. He's only been in Double A for a week. We'll see how he does. And then he just opens everybody's eyes in the process. And he was a revelation, even against spring training arms where it was from low A to triple A arms. He was hitting everything, regardless of what was being thrown at him.
Yeah, I mean, it's proof of concept. Like, we got to see this dude hit dingers on TV, even if it was spring training. Like, it's still fun. I'm not counting on him to be a productive major leaguer in 2024. I think there's plenty of people in the WFNY family who are a little more optimistic about the chances of that than I am. I do think Manzardo, though, I think there's clearly a space for him on the roster. And I think, like, you know, I think we'll find out pretty quickly, you know, how we should feel about that Savali trade, because, you know, I think he kind of is what he is. I mean, not, which isn't to say he's going to come up and immediately be a fully formed product, but, like, you know, he kind of needs to hit, you know, he needs to come up and hit, and then he needs to hit more, and then he needs to hit and hit more. So if he, like, comes up and he's, you know, he gets 150 plate appearances and he doesn't look great, like, it's not over for him. But I think that, like, really, really kind of lowers how I feel about the whole thing. So there's clearly room for him. And, you know, I think, you know, how he does is a bellwether for how that trade looks, and also just kind of the ceiling for this team's offense.
Yeah, I think that there is a I definitely think that there is a spot for him. I do enjoy the rotating DH that they are able to use when he's not on the roster, allowing Jose to get a defensive day off, get a Ramon Laureano bat in there, you know, that kind of a thing. But as we get into end of April and May, those things will kind of work their way out and it won't be needed as much. And that's when he'll likely be up. Matt, when do you think over under April 27th for Manzardo? You think before or after April 27th? A month from today.
I think I'm going to go over just because the organization has a tendency to be very patient with these things. Obviously with Manzardo, like Mitch mentioned, there's probably a clear path for him to be playing right now, but I think they just want to be extra sure that he's ready. They don't put him in a bad spot, because when he came over, he was dealing with a bunch of stuff. He did start to hit better in the last month of the minor league season, but there were still some concerns about if it was injury, if mentally he wasn't there because he was dealing with that issue with his mother. And so I guess they just want him to want to make sure that he's in the right space and that he's hitting well to justify being up there.
Yeah. And back to what you were saying, Gerbs. I do think I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the whole Bo Naylor gets to DH once or twice a week too, like maybe like a half off day. Sure. Hedges behind the plate and you still keep that bat in the lineup and also keep your prediction for most homers on the team alive.
We're striving for here, me being right.
Well, speak for yourself, buddy. but I do think that he – sorry, I lost my train of thought. I do think that it makes a lot of sense from a roster construction standpoint to have, if you have this great hitting catcher, try and keep him in the lineup. And, you don't want to overwork the catcher, but you also want to keep your good bats in the lineup. So it does make sense to have that DH spot able to be rotated and – Manzardo and neither Manzardo nor Josh Naylor have much positional flexibility. I am with you there. And also we'll see what happens with injuries. There's always injuries and there's always going to be space. So
Yeah. Pretty much like with injuries, like we didn't expect Tanner Bibee to show up until probably later in the season last year, but then injuries kind of forced their hand. So who knows? Maybe David Fry injury pops up and then Kyle Manzardo randomly shows up on April 15th. Who knows? Like that's how it breaks.
Yeah. I think bringing up David Fry is good because that was actually what I was going to get into. Having Bo take, DH days and have a just hitting day, you're making the most of having David Fry on the roster in that case, because you are, you're able to use him as a pinch hitter for Hedges later on in the game, or because you obviously can't swap out Bo from the DH at that point. Whatever you can, there is a functionality to it. I don't remember what it is. And I think you have to have a pitcher hit at that point. I don't even know. Yeah.
Okay. the double switch.
Yeah, I mean the double switch is always an option. I'm pro double switch, so let's do it. Let's start Bo Naylor at DH, bring him in as a defensive replacement, and just double switch the hell out of the game. That sounds amazing. Let's go back to 1895.
Right. Yeah, where we have the box scores that have 37 people on them.
You want to hear a fun trivia question? Speaking of 1895 box scores,
absolutely.
Do you guys know why K is the abbreviation for strikeout?
Oh, I think I do know this. You're gonna say it. I'm gonna be like, I knew that. I knew it.
I'll give you a hint. S stood for something else.
Sacrifice.
Yep, it stood for sacrifice. Sacrifice used to be a more important stat than strikeout.
I used to keep the book on my dad's softball, and so I always knew S was sacrifice.
Nice.
I did not realize it. I for some reason my brain thought K was somebody's first initial, and they struck somebody out. But yeah, it makes sense.
Nope. It's the S K was sacrifice. Strike.
Yep. Strike.
Yeah. Anyway, I digress. What's your next question, Gerbs?
Well, we did the pitchers. We did. Guards, you didn't give me an over under August or April 27th on Manzardo.
I'm gonna go later as well, just because I think they're gonna call him up when there's a more permanent spot for him. They're not gonna call him up if someone tweaks their ankle and have him
right. You're not pulling that lever.
And I'd rather not predict a serious injury. So
right. Oh no. Do either of you think DeLauder is up this year? There seem to be indications from some of the beat writers that it's possible / almost likely, but do you think they pull that lever this year?
I think so if he just keeps obliterating the baseball like he's been since last summer. I think Andre Knott stated at least a number of 200 to 250 plate appearances if he's keeping up the same rate that he has since last July when he made his debut in Lake County. And so I think it's possible, but I think it'll probably be closer to Memorial Day, like August, September range. I would it probably way later because I still.
When do you think Memorial Day is?
Yeah, I think you're thinking of Labor Day, buddy.
Labor Day. Sorry.
Like Memorial Day is the end of May.
Yeah.
So,
this is fair. This is so great for me personally because I get to troll you about this one.
And you call you're a night owl too. You're like, yeah, I'm staying up until 10 tomorrow. It's like this is my bedtime is like 25 minutes.
Right, 4 a.m. comes real early when you're me. So yeah,
yep. Same here.
All right. Since we're wrapping up here soon, go ahead and give me. I asked this in our roundtable for tomorrow, so I apologize. But final record. And where do you think they land? Do they make playoffs? Where at in the division do they land? Matt, we'll go with you first.
I think worst case scenario, second place again. And I think best case scenario, they win the division with around 90 to 93 wins is my projection.
Is that your best case scenario? Or is that what you think is going to happen? What's your?
Oh, just like... Division-wise, I think they can win the division for sure. Playoff-wise, I'm not quite sure because, obviously that's a different beast. But, like, I think worst-case scenario would be something similar to last year where they're kind of sputtering in the mud, similar record, and we're kind of just in the same spot.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think, like, that is a good realistic range of, like, you know, somewhere between, like, 78 and 93 wins. Like, I think that's like a good realistic 15 win range right there. If I'm going to have to put a single number to it, go with 87 wins. I worry that's not quite enough to win the division. And, you know, how the whole wild card thing shakes out, it's anyone's guess. Like, I think it's pretty realistic that, you know, the Rangers, the Mariners, the Blue Jays, you know, all could be around that number, 87. So, right. You know, it really ultimately comes down to how do the Guardians do? How do the Twins do? And are there any surprise teams? I think a lot of the trendy take, as always, is that the Royals are the best team in the division or that the Royals.
Yeah, guys, have you heard the Royals are on the come up? You know,
like. Yeah. Dude, you know what is crazy is like March is both International Women's Month, but it's also National Royals Month because it's the month that everyone talks about how great the Royals are going to be. And then everyone remembers in April how much the Royals suck and how much they have sucked for so long.
It's like fair. They want to will it to happen just so they can have somebody else to talk to besides us and the Twins. Because the Tigers...
Yeah, it's because they spend money and people like the fact that they spend money and that's totally fair. Like I respect the fact that they spend money. They just also suck. Both things can be true.
They also spend it on weird players. They got Seth Lugo to be like their big money like guy and everything. I will say they are on the come up in that Bobby Witt signed a big time extension. Like
he's good.
Michael Garcia is a really good guy. Like a speedy third baseman, which you don't normally hear about too much. There are guys on the Royals that are scary, but the majority of the roster it makes you kind of like, oh, that's where you're at. Like Cole Reagans is their opening day, who is great, but then like again, it goes from Seth Lugo to who? I truly, honestly, do not know the rest of their rotation. Like,
Do they still have Mitch Keller? Like that rotation? Yeah, it's a steep.
I think they signed Keller to an extension.
Wait, Brad? Oh, Jesus Christ, Brad Keller?
Brad Keller? Mitch Keller did sign an extension.
I remember every Mitch, and I know Mitch Keller was on the Pirates.
Mitch Keller did sign an extension with the Pirates. Brad is not there anymore. I don't think.
I remember Brad Keller because he was there.
VDP is a good one. Vinny P is great.
Fun. I think Freddie Fermin is a fun story. Like, I kind of am rooting for that guy. He's like every time he steps up to the plate against the Guardians, he gets like a 9-pitch plate appearance that ends in like a ground out to second base. But it's always like, that was a really annoying 9-pitch ground out to second base.
It's a guard's jug. As for me, everyone has, I work at a school, if for those who don't remember. So I have a lot of teachers that they talk to, and many of them ask me my thing. And truly, honestly, I have been saying 92 wins for this team, which is a pretty high number, but I am such an eternal optimist that I can't get myself to think about him being less than that. When I look at what the kids could be. So I'm going to say 92 because I've been saying that for at least a month now. And I can see winning the division, especially with that number. And I agree with you, Mitch. I do think the division is the only way you're getting to the playoffs. I don't think you're going to get to the wild card with what else is out there in the West with the Astros and the Rangers and the Orioles and the Yankees and
the Mariners and
Mariners and Rays and Rays.
It's going to be a blood and the Royals. The wild card. Royals.
Right. The Tigers are the scary one. They're the ones that I'm like, if it's not the Twins, it's the Tigers. And that's where I'm like, but anyway,
I think the Royals.
Yeah.
Huh?
They're scarier than the Royals.
They are scarier than the Royals. They're a lot scarier than the Royals.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. I'm going to say they win the division. I think they can maybe make the ALDS, but that's where it goes. That's as far as it'll go. I don't think anybody's getting moved off the roster. I don't think they do this, they're in first place in July and they trade Shane Bieber for Heston Kerstad. I just don't think it's happening. I think Bieber's staying on and they're getting a comp pick from it at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, say what you will about it. If you want to be upset about it, be upset about it. But that's me. So, all right. Anything else from you guys?
Nah, just excited for the season to start tomorrow.
Yeah,
Matt's going to go rip four white monsters for tomorrow. And
oh my God, don't have a heart attack. I'm always amazed at like the beginning of baseball season. It's like, I don't know. It's like you have baseball's back and it's here and it's exciting and it's there every day and quickly you settle in and it's your old friend and it's always there and you got nothing to do. So you turn on the game and there it is every day, old reliable baseball, and you get used to it and you take it for granted and then it's over and then it just ends and then you don't have it for so long and it's a cold winter and you're alone and you don't have any baseball and then you get used to the feeling and then it comes back again and we're here and it's joy and it's April. It's baseball. It's so exciting. I can't wait. I can't wait for this next 6 months. Excited to keep recording with you guys. It's going to be fun.
Oh, that's just a great way to end. So that's how we're going to end it. For Mitch, for Matt, for Ethan, for the guards, I am saying I love you. Good night.
In a world infatuated with comic fandom, comes a show to help us remember the talents that have inspired us.
Whoa, 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 Kat.
Oh, come on. It wasn't that bad.
It's a bit dramatic. Let's just tell them about the show, guys.
We are the Canned Air Podcast.
Join us weekly for a comedic trip through pop culture.
We also welcome some cool comic creators, as well as some of the voice and screen actors that helped shape your childhood.
Find us on cannedairpodcast.com and on the Evergreen Podcast Network.